Oh, I mean, I remember like telling Pam, like, hey, I don't know if I'm going to be able to go into work on Friday because it's 15 degrees. I am just sick as a dog already, and I'm going to be out here all weekend.
I remember you being sick at that time.
Yeah, and I, Mamba mentality, I play through it.
And that takes us into our topic today lunchtime. John Bozica.
Noah Hiles.
And obviously devastating news over the weekend to sports fans and really anyone across this world. Mm-hmm. The fact that Kobe Bryant and his daughter Gianna and a number of others passed away in a tragic helicopter crash in L.A. And it really kind of hit everyone, I think, like a wall of bricks on Sunday. I know I wasn't feeling well at the time, and Allie actually woke me up. I was asleep, and she woke me up, and it was kind of like one of those things that she said, oh, I'm on Twitter, and someone just said Kobe Bryant died. And I was like, no, that's not real. I was like, that's got to be a fake tweet. I was like, there's no way that can have legs to it. And then it's like, as I started sifting through Twitter and everything started coming together, it's like I was just like, it's real. And I almost didn't have words for it, and I still almost don't. It's crazy to think about.
It's one of the more shocking moments that'll take place in our lifetime. I mean, obviously, we're going to have individual moments that are more close to us individually, personal moments, yes. But every 20, 30 years, there's a death where just the whole world kind of stops. Like, you hear people our grandparents' age talk about where they were when Kennedy was killed. Mm-hmm. Or when John Lennon was killed, mm-hmm. or Princess Diana, or Kenny made a great comparison, Kenny Rota, to Roberto Clemente.
Mm-hmm.
For me, growing up in Pittsburgh, Mac Miller. I remember the news when the news broke about him. And,
sure.
And there's a whole bunch of other deaths or tragic events, you know, 9/11, the Sandy Hook shooting, everything. You know, there's certain moments in life where news breaks and you kind of remember just little details about everything that was going on. And I certainly won't forget where I was.
I mean, it's kind of hard for you to forget where you were being at the Pro Bowl.
Yes. So it was 3 minutes until it was 3 till 3. So they were just about to announce all the Pro Bowlers. And that's actually my favorite part of the Pro Bowl. Cause I remember as a kid, it's, you know, you stay up and or cause it was played later when I was a kid, and you wait for the Steelers to be announced, or if you grew up a Browns fan, you wait for the Browns to be announced.
All one of them.
There were three this year, but yeah, normally it was Joe Thomas, and that was it. But I was excited, you know, just like because that's like the pageantry and everything, and I was having a great time.
It was a moment that you'd waited for.
Yeah, and that was one of the few moments I waited for, and right before that got underway, I was on Twitter, and I saw three people tweet something along the lines of, this can't be real. And there wasn't a retweet, and the three people that tweeted it on my timeline had no connection to each other. One was a friend from high school, one was a friend from college, one was a rapper from Pittsburgh who I'd met, but, you know, they wouldn't have known each other. And I was like, what else is going on today? Like, there's no other sporting events taking place. What else is happening right now that all three people would care about?
Sure.
And eventually, you know, I looked into it a little bit more and, you know, I just went numb. It's crazy to think that, I mean, of all people, Kobe Bryant.
Well, and it got me thinking, and you said you wanted to discuss this on the podcast, and it got me thinking of things in our lifetime that, like, we've taken that have been sports figures that have created, like, cultural things for us.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and just a couple come to mind. I mean, obviously, being our generation, anytime you played football on the playground and you made a one-handed catch, what would you say? Like, you mossed that dude, right?
Well, yeah, moss or going over top of someone is what I, but yes, yeah.
Like, you mossed
embarrassing
them.
Someone covering you, yeah,
so you mossed them.
Yeah.
You know, you think of if you played golf, like, and you hit, like, a great shot or, like, you...
You just hit that fist pump.
Yeah, you, like, hit a fist pump. That was a Tiger Woods type thing,
yeah.
Right? Well, with Kobe, the thing that I always think about and, like, everybody always thinks about is, like, I'm about to ball up, like, three Kleenex here and there's a trash can over there and I just shoot at it and I say, Kobe.
And
it's like everyone did that. Everyone.
When I was in line for the gift store at the Pro Bowl, we and I didn't watch hardly any of the game, because especially when that news broke, I mean, I couldn't focus.
Oh, the game takes...
The game was even more meaningless than it was prior to that news.
And I'm sure if the players knew at that point, it was meaningless
to them. I tried
to
explain it to my sister, who is a semi-sports fan, but not a huge NBA fan. I tried to say, like, Cassidy, this is the equivalent of LeBron dying. This is the equivalent, you know, after he would retire, obviously. But I was like, this is one of the top 50 most famous people in the world, probably. And he's gone. And the reporting and everything. But when I was in line to go to the gift store, a little kid shot a, you know, he had a hot dog. He wrapped up his tinfoil that it was in and threw it in the garbage. And I almost started crying. Because, I just literally think of, like, every time in middle school, high school, college, like, Kobe, you do that. And that's just, it's just one of the many things that just goes to show how influential he was. And just, he was just kind of a staple. He was just always someone that was a part of things. Be it his commercials. I always think of the commercials with him and LeBron when they were the Nike puppets. Mm-hmm. And, like, there was the one where he's searching his house. LeBron, have you seen my rings? I have 5 rings. I cannot find any of these rings. And that was when LeBron didn't have rings. To just the competitive stories that you heard about him. I mean, he wasn't even someone I was necessarily a huge fan of, but everyone respected the guy.
Well, and I remember that my buddy, Brian, who's actually in my wedding, I remember that when we first started playing basketball with him, like, my brother and I, like, we acknowledge that, like, Kobe was a great player and, like, we enjoyed watching him, but being Cleveland fans, like, we were a huge fan of LeBron at the time. Mm-hmm. And I remember that, like, my buddy, he did everything in his game. He tried to model after Kobe. Like, he would shoot the fadeaway jump shots. He would drive to the rim and make plays like him. And it's like, he was always the best player of any of our groups. And I remember that, like, there was one day we were playing, he was like Mamba mentality. And it was like, it just got me thinking about, like, all of those moments in my life where, despite never meeting this person, despite never seeing them actually play in person either, it like had such a cultural effect on my life and on the life of so many people that I knew. And, like, I can think of other people that have passed in my lifetime that were huge cultural figures, but I can't think of someone that was that important to, like, everyone that I knew. Like, almost all of my friends, almost everyone that I've associated with has a Kobe story.
He was like air, or like the color blue, or just something that, like, it was always around you, but you never really, I mean, it was, you're just used to it. Like, we got into sports when Kobe Bryant was becoming Kobe Bryant.
When it's almost like we took him for granted.
I don't know if we took him for granted. I think everyone appreciated Kobe.
But, like, I'm saying, like, when you have, like, greatness like that, like, you just kind of, like, watch it and, you expect it, though.
I think that you can expect it without taking it for granted. I think Kobe Bryant was gratefully appreciated during his time on Earth. I mean, I think back of, I mean, my memories of watching him, you know, and I was pretty young during the three-peat. But my first memories of him were watching him against Shaq on Christmas Day. It was the Lakers and the Heat. And those early, and because those were,
yeah, like 2005 probably.
2004, 2005. It was right when Shaq and the Lakers broke up. And that was like the first time they were to play each other. And that was one of my first Kobe Bryant memories. You know, you think of the Gasol, Meta World Peace, Lamar Odom teams.
See, that's the Kobe that I remember, because I remember
24 Kobe. I don't remember a lot of 8 Kobe. The 81 point game is the only one that really sticks out in my mind.
Same here. I remember that, and then I also remember he had that alley-oop to Shaq, and I forget who was on the play-by-play that day. I think it was Costas or somebody like that, but all they said was Kobe to Shaq, and like Shaq like
did, and Shaq's running with his fingers,
like,
pointing.
Put both fingers out, and it's like, I remember that. Like, I remember that memory. I think that was against the Blazers, I'm pretty sure, but
yes.
Like, then I also remember, because my dad was a huge Celtics fan when they had, like, Pierce and Rondo and Garnett and Allen and that whole group. And I remember watching that whole series that went to 7 games. Mm-hmm. And I remember sitting down and watching game 7. And, like, I appreciated Kobe, but then I saw him, like, come to life in a game 7. And I remember just saying to my dad, like, you know, respect.
Yeah.
Like, this dude is amazing. You know, like, because I felt the Celtics played a great game, But Kobe was just better.
But Metal World Peace was the one who hit those big shots.
He hit some big shots.
That was my guy.
But the thing is that, like, it was one of those moments.
Yes.
Like, I remember, it's just like watching his last game to
me. That's my favorite memory of his.
Like, because I remember, like, as I was telling somebody earlier today, like, I didn't watch it from beginning to end. But, like, I put it on in the fourth quarter because I kept, like, checking my phone. I was like, I wonder how he's doing. And then, like, I saw he had 35 points on, like, 40 shots. And I was like, okay, like, they're just letting Kobe do whatever he wants to tonight. And then I put it on. It's like, he hit 45. He hit 50. He hit 55. And then eventually he hit the 60 ball. And I was like, you know, I just witnessed greatness the last time that it's ever happened for him. And, like, I will never forget where I was, what I was doing. I was alone by myself in an apartment at that point. And, like, I was, like, jumping up and down throughout that entire thing because it was just a roller coaster of emotions watching him do it one last time.
Yeah, I was at a Pirate game that night, and I came home, and the girl I was dating at the time, she was like, why are we watching this regular season game? And I was like, this is it. This is the end of a 20-year run. And I just remember being in awe of every shot, every look. I mean, they were losing. And what was cool about it, obviously, is it was against the Utah Jazz, the team that he notoriously choked against in his first playoff series. He airballed a chance to send it or to win it at the end of regulation. And then in overtime, he had a chance to send it into double overtime, I believe, and airballed again. Mm-hmm. And so for that to come full circle, where really, I mean, the guy was known for being a stone cold killer, especially in the last 2 minutes. He would put any team to bed. And for him to, I mean, that team was garbage that he was on, that Lakers team.
Oh, it was awful.
And for him to battle back in a meaningless game against the Utah Jazz, the one team that he still had kind of a bone to pick with, and do it all by himself. And you talked about all the shots he took. He did not miss many shots in that fourth quarter.
No, he made like every single look.
And it was every possession, and it was an electric factory. I couldn't get enough of it. And, you know, you get chills thinking of it today. And that's only part of him. That's only part of, like, the basketball part of him is obviously the part that we all know and love about the guy. But overall, I feel like there was so much more coming with him.
Well, and I just pulled this up because I wanted to see the final stats just for people that are listening. But that game, so 60 points, and in true Mamba fashion, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, true Mamba fashion.
Oh, yeah.
At that point, he was 22 of 50 from the field, which is still 44%.
44% is not bad.
And he was 6 of 21 from 3, which is kind of ridiculous.
That's some J.R. Smith numbers.
And then he was 10 of 12 from the line. So, I mean, like, again, it was just one of those games. The only other guy on the team in double figures was Jordan Clarkson. Mm. And it's like, just to think that, you know, he did that one last time. And watching some highlights from the Cavs game last night, I noticed that Larry Nance Jr. had to leave the floor because he only played with him for like a couple years, if even that. And he had to leave the floor because he was so overcome with emotion. And that says to me, too, that the thing that people don't realize about this guy is that, as you said, his relationships with everyone, it was bigger than basketball.
And he meant so much to so many. I mean, the Ja Morant, Trae Young, Damian Lillard, all of these.
Kyrie Irving,
and even LeBron.
Yeah.
Like, everyone in the NBA, pretty much in today's game, grew up idolizing the guy.
Well, and the other thing, too, that I feel like gets lost in the shuffle with him, because we're so used to being like, what a great basketball player. I saw a video yesterday of like him playing with like a violin player, like a viola player, and also like a bass player. And like they were sitting there and he was playing Moonlight Sonata by Beethoven on the piano.
Yeah.
And like he was playing it, you know, as well as some concert pianist would. And like I was thinking to myself, like the things that this guy could do, like Mamba mentality truly went to everything.
Learning Slovenian just so he could talk smack to Luka Doncic on the sideline.
I mean, to be honest, that's badass, man.
Yeah, I mean, it is. And that's, I think, I was at the airport all Sunday night waiting for my Monday morning early flight, and I consumed podcasts, I watched videos, I read the LA Times, the New York Times articles.
I know
on
Bill
these
Plaschke
guys.
Wrote a fantastic article.
Yes, and
article.
So did Mark Stein. I picked up a copy of the New York Times and just... That's something I'll probably hold on to forever.
You should.
And really the thing that they hit home with is he brought that Mamba mentality into all aspects of his life, where he was reading, you know, stories about business ethics and screenwriting and all different areas that he had plans to really pursue with that same mentality that he took to the basketball court later on in his life. And there's an interview he did with Dan Katz and Alex Rodriguez on a podcast called The Corp. And he talked about, he told them if his next 20 years in life weren't more successful than his 20 years in the NBA, he considered himself a failure. And they were both, A-Rod and Big Cat, were both kind of like, dude, like, that's kind of disrespectful to say about your basketball career. And he said, no, that mentality is what made me great at basketball, and I'm more than a basketball player. And that's why he speaks seven languages, and, you know, he won an Oscar 2 years after hanging up his shoes. And, I mean, the guy attacked, and I think that that's what made him. Kobe is one of the rare people, athletes, entertainers, whatever, who invoked emotion out of every single person who consumed his content.
Well, and that's the thing. Name another athlete, and you can't, that has an Oscar, has the ability to play Moonlight Sonata, speaks seven languages, mm-hmm. scored 81 points in a basketball game. Oh, yeah, had five NBA championships, where he was like the key factor, if not like the secondary factor with the years with Shaq, to all of those championships. And even in those years, he was still looked at as being like kind of like the face of the franchise. Yeah. But like, you just can't find another athlete. And the one last thing I wanted to bring up is I was talking to my dad, and he brought up an interesting point to me, because we were talking about how you could say there are four athletes now that all passed away in tragic ways due to plane crashes. You could talk about Roberto Clemente. You could talk about Kobe Bryant. You could talk about Thurman Munson and Payne Stewart, the golfer. And it got him thinking, if those people didn't have the fortune of being rich like they were, and being in that situation of being able to have the ability to take a mm-hmm. plane somewhere or go to Nicaragua and help somebody out or mm-hmm. do something like that, would they have ever been put in that situation? Like, let's say Kobe or Roberto or somebody just wakes up that day and says, you know what, I'm just going to drive a car. I'm going to do this, or I'm going to do that. How would that have changed their life?
I mean, but that's life, man. I mean,
I know it is.
Who's
but
to
I mean,
say it's... they don't die in a car accident the next day? Who's to say they don't get
it is.
Like John Lennon, like some crazy person just shoots them. That's life. And that, I think that that's a great message to take away, is that life doesn't care if you're Kobe Bryant, doesn't care if you're Gigi Bryant or the seven other people who were on that mm-hmm. helicopter who all tragically lost their lives. It doesn't care if you're some homeless person on the side of the road, or anything in between. It can come to an end anytime, anywhere, any place, any way. And that's why, you know, and I've always kind of attacked my mentality of life is just smile and have fun. I mean, I've told you, I'm probably like the happiest person you're ever going to meet. And I take pride in that. It's just because, you know, stuff like this can happen to anyone. It can happen. Kobe Bryant wasn't supposed to die at 41.
No.
He was supposed to be Bill Russell on the sideline, you know, telling all the young guys at the award shows that he would kick their ass if they were, you know, to play in their prime. And it's a damn shame that we don't get to see his Hall of Fame speech, you know, him age gracefully and see him be successful in other walks of life and see his daughter develop into whatever she was going to be, both as a young lady and as a basketball player, and the other seven people, like I said, that were lost.
He lived 41 years, but to me, he encapsulated two great movie quotes that I always think about when it comes to life. One is from Ferris Bueller's Day Off, that life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you might miss it. Mm-hmm. Well, he lived life to the fullest in 41 years. And then the other one is from Shawshank Redemption at the end, where Morgan Freeman's character says, get busy living or get busy dying.
Yeah.
And then he says, that's damn right. And Kobe was busy living all 41 of those years. And that's why we'll never forget him.
Yeah. And the Mamba mentality and the memories we have of him moving forward, I think that that's something, like I said, that mentality, that tenacity, that mm-hmm. drive, you can apply that to all walks of life. And that's why he was admired by not just basketball fans, but really anyone who truly could see how ferocious of a competitor and how driven he was as a human being. It was awesome to see, and I can't wait to continue that Mamba mentality in my life moving forward.
This podcast for the Black Mamba.
Yes.
I'm John Bozica.
I'm Noah Hiles.